Welcome to our final presentation on mutual funds for Chapter 4. And in this presentation, we will tie together a few odds and ends, discuss fund families, some of the fund investor services and information sources, and then we're going to zero in on a sample mutual fund and see just how well mutual funds can serve us, just what kind of return we can expect from some of the better funds in the industry. But first, let's take a look at fund families. A family of fund exists when one mutual fund investment company manages a group of mutual funds. You see, many years ago, a company might have only had one or two funds, but of course, competition heated up, and so one company would have a different type of fund, and then others would follow, and they'd come out with their own type of fund, and others would follow them. And so finally, these mutual fund companies just got huge. And so there's a handful that are monumentally large, but as we said, there are thousands of funds out there. Funds in the family vary in their objectives, and you can move your money from one fund to another within a fund family, almost always with no charge. Sometimes there's a charge if you move quickly. Funds are being charged for excessive transfers within the fund family, and this is done to discourage people jumping in and jumping out of the markets, which is, in my humble opinion, a very bad thing to do, especially with mutual funds because they're long-term investments. Of course, if your fund is in a taxable account, the IRS says, oh, you've just generated a taxable transaction. If it's in a retirement account, the IRS doesn't care until you take the money out. You can move it around as much as you want. And that's why some funds have instituted this excessive transfer charge. Or what they'll do is they'll just say you can't do it. You can do 10 a year and that's it. Or some of them will just kick you out. They'll just say, we don't want you anymore if you're going to do this kind of stuff. Mutual funds are long-term investments. And many years ago, Forbes had a great saying, choose a family, not a fund. And I agree. You want to look at a fund where most all of the mutual funds are high quality, long-term oriented. This is me. This is my humble opinion. And of course, I'm right. That's a joke. Yes. And then they serve you for the long term, which is what mutual funds are designed to do. And on slide 63, we see the top 10 largest mutual fund companies. Well, it's hard to really know because this data is hard to get a hold of, and a lot of it depends on how you measure the mutual fund. Now, this guy, John Wagner, is actually very experienced, skilled out. He's been a journalist, a financial journalist, investment journalist for many years. And so I have a tendency to believe him when he says that he went into the ICI or information, the sip from the fire hose, and was able to discern this. I haven't been able to. Me going into the ICI, I haven't been able to figure out who's the biggest, who's the smallest. But by and large now, most everyone agrees that Vanguard is the largest mutual fund out there. Fidelity for many years was, but now they're number two. And American funds, which most people have never heard of, they have been number three for a long time also. And sometimes they're number two, depending on who is doing the measuring. And all three of those companies are very good. My favorite's American. In the face-to-face class is when we would go through and take a look at the offerings from Fidelity, which are too many. That's my humble opinion. Fidelity has just too many darn funds, over 500 of them or so. Vanguard also has really exploded in number of funds, but far less than Fidelity. I like American because they have far fewer funds. They just say, look, you know, you don't need that many funds. T. Rowe Price is another great company, folks. You really want to take a look at their offerings. And those four companies, along with Franklin Templeton and another sort of an oddball company, Dodge & Cox, are on the website. They're in Canvas. They're on the class website. And you don't have to use my website. There's just any search will find the companies that you're interested in. And there are dozens out there. J.P. Morgan went on a buying spree and bought a t- tons of other mutual funds, so now they're number five. And BlackRock. Well, we've already seen BlackRock, right? If you've done the assignment for Chapter 4, who runs the thrift savings plan for the federal government? BlackRock. Yes, they're a very smart company, folks. And then Franklin Templeton, they've been around a long time, and they're a very good company, too. They've got some awesome funds. So you want to check them out also. Now, TIAA is a company that's been around for decades, has done very well for their investors, but they originally were set up just to go into the educational community. In fact, TIAA stands for Teachers Insurance Annuity Association, right? Something along those lines, Teachers Investment and Annuity Association. And they have ventured out into the hard, cruel world outside the educational world and partnered. They bought Nuveen a few years ago. And they're some very good funds. Check them out. Dimensional Funds has broken into the top 10 recently and is a fund that's very popular with advisors. You don't do too much advertising, but boy, they have some great funds, so check them out. And then PIMCO, Pacific Investment Company, was a lot higher. They've been falling because their star investment advisor, Bill Gross, no longer is with them. But they've got great bonds. They had. They still do. You know, I haven't followed them as much. They're big in the bond funds. So please do check out these or others. It's a sip from the fire hose, folks. There's just so much out there. There's so many out there. And in the face-to-face class, it's the fidelity that really just turns people off. There's just too much. It's too much! And you're going to go on the website or in Canvas and click on one of those links, and you'll see that they have over 11,000 funds. See, Fidelity's a very good marketing company. They'll sell you their funds and everybody else's too. So, you know, their funds, they have over 500 or so. And then they have, you know, 9,000 or 10,000 funds that they'll sell from other people too. So they're a very smart organization in terms of marketing. And some of their funds are excellent. Check out that Contra Fund, one of my favorite funds, Mr. Will Danoff. Brilliant man. Brilliant, but he's going to be retired. I don't know, maybe he's not going to retire soon, but he's getting up there, like me. Okay, so check out some fund families. Do a little bit of research. Realize that there's no way you can learn everything about all the funds out there because there's just too darn many. You have to zero in on the companies that speak to you. Slide number 64. What are some of the investor services? Well, as we said, mutual funds make life very easy for investors, and they do their best. They're always trying to do their best. Automatic investment plans, in my humble opinion, are the absolute best way to invest, right? You don't worry about whether it is not or is it is a good time to invest. Every month is a good time to invest $50 or $100 that comes right out of your paycheck or checking account. And P.S., it is practically the only way most people will ever invest. And we'll discuss dollar cost averaging, pay yourself first. Automatically send fixed amounts of money every month or whatever from your paycheck or from your checking account. It's the best way to invest, in my humble opinion. Slide number 65. Now, all mutual fund companies, by default, will set up an automatic reinvestment plan. We'll discuss this for stocks in Chapter 5, but mutual funds, it's the default. It's, if you don't ask for it, otherwise, they're going to simply take all dividends, interest, capital gains, and reinvest them back into your mutual fund. And this allows, let's read at the bottom, allows an investor to earn fully compounded rates of return. Unless an investor needs the income, and some people do, you know, they want the income, send me the income I need it to live off of. It is always a good idea to reinvest dividends and capital gains received from mutual fund. As we said, it's the default. When you open up a new mutual fund account, a 403B, a 401K, a Roth IRA, or a regular account, they're just going to assume that you want to reinvest your dividends, reinvest your interest payments, your capital gains. Okay, now, how do you take the money out? Well, unless you need it, you know, okay, I need all of it right now. I'm going to buy a house or whatever. I'm going to Tahiti for 6 months. Most people are going to set up a systematic withdrawal plan. in your checking account, you have the money automatically transferred every month, every quarter, sometimes annually. And so 30 years you're going to be investing, 40 years, and then another 40 years you're going to be taking it out. So here's the deal, huh? You put in $100 a month over the next 40 years, you take out $2,000 or $3,000 a month for the next 40 years. You millennials, what do you think? Cool? Yeah, it can happen. Check out those future value calculations in Chapter 1. They're not due. You're not going to have to do them on the exam. Don't worry. They're optional. Just look at the results. Conversion privileges, well, almost all mutual funds are going to allow you to move your money from one fund to another, as we described back a few slides ago. But again, if it's not in a retirement account, the IRS assumes, or not assumes, they just say, you've just moved from one investment to another. You need to pay taxes on that. But if it's in a retirement account, boop, doesn't matter. You can do it as much as you want. It's only when you take the money out that any tax consequences. And if it's in a Roth IRA, if you wait until retirement, you don't pay any taxes. I like the Roth IRA. We spend more time in that in the Business 121 class, but we'll also spend a little bit of time at the end of the semester on different types of accounts. Now, purchases. How do you purchase the mutual fund? Well, the closed-end mutual funds, the ETFs, you have to go through a stock brokerage account. The ETFs, we saw that some companies like Fidelity, like Vanguard, will allow you to open up a brokerage account with them. That's not the mutual fund company. It's a sister company that's a brokerage company, but it has the same name, so everybody thinks it's the same company. And they will not charge you any fees, any commissions, any brokerage commissions for buying their ETFs. Very smart marketing. Open-end mutual funds, you buy through a broker, you buy directly from the investment company, and as we said, the best way, in my humble opinion, is through automatic contributions. Selling the mutual fund, same idea. If it's a closed-end mutual fund or an ETF, you have to do it through a brokerage firm, through a stock exchange. But if it's open-ended, you call up your broker if you're using a broker, or just go on the mutual fund website. It's all electronic now. And in my humble opinion, again, the absolute bestest way is through automatic withdrawals. Turn it into your own little annuity, because annuities from insurance companies sound tempting, but boy, are they poopy, and we'll skewer them much later in the semester. Slide 68. What about taxes? Why do we always have to talk about taxes? Well, it's important to think of. There are two types of distributions. Income distributions, income dividends, which are taxed as income, but they are called ordinary, typically if they're long-term. It gets into tax consequences. And typically you don't have to pay more than 15 or 20%. Unless you're in much higher tax brackets, and that's, you know, we're talking $400,000 or $500,000, and then the capital gains distributions are taxed as capital gains again if they're long term, more than a year, and the maximum is for the most part is 20%. Most people will pay 15%. Again, you have to be in the upper tax brackets to be paying 20%. Reinvested dividends and capital gains are still taxable transactions, so save your year-end statements. There's always talk. No, actually, I haven't heard anything in the last few years, so I guess I should just take this out. But it used to be that people would get really, really angry. They would buy into a mutual fund, and then there'd be some distributions, but the stock market would go down that year. And so their value went down, but they still got some distributions. So they still had to pay taxes, and they would complain bitterly. What are you talking about? I lost money. Why should I have to pay taxes? And so they complained to their congressperson when the mutual fund company and their tax preparer says, well, it's part of the tax code. And so the congresspeople say, well, how do we make these people happy? Well, why don't we set it up so that unrealized capital gains, in other words, paper profits, would not be taxed until you sell your mutual fund shares? It's not going to happen, folks. It's not going to happen. It would make an accounting nightmare. So just, if your mutual fund goes down, but you still have to pay some nominal taxes, if it's in a non-retirement account, just relax. It's not going to be a lot of money. And when it is a lot of money, congratulations. You've done pretty darn well for yourself. again, as we said, if it's in a 401k, a Roth IRA, another type of retirement account, you don't pay any taxes until retirement, until you take it out. Of course, if you put it in a Roth, you don't, and you wait until retirement, you don't pay any taxes. If you take it out early, I think some of you already know what's going to happen. Right, you're going to have to pay the taxes and penalties, and to the IRS, the Congress actually is saying, look, this is long-term money, put it there, forget about it, come back to it later when you're retired. Cool? Okay. Now, where do we get good information? Well, you're supposed to read the prospectus. It's such a joke, actually. The prospectus is, I like saying prospectus is, I think the plural is prospecti, were much larger. And you had to, as a broker, you had to give them to your clients. It was required. And they would hold them in their hands and say, what do I do with this? Because they didn't read them. They have now made them a lot smaller. Plus, if you go online, they say, here, click here, and you've read the prospectus. Right, right. How many people actually read the darn things? They describe the risk factors, the fund's performance, the types of investments, dividends, distributions, taxes, information about the fund's management, and no one reads them. Well, I'm going to ask you to read them. I pass them out in the face-to-face class, and it's really not that hard, folks. Once you've read them a few times, it's not the end of the world. And here's an example of yours truly being very different from everyone else. I was, a long time ago, very skeptical of the investment world. I thought there was a lot of hanky-panky, and it's true. I was right. There is a lot of hanky-panky. But there are many good companies that have been out there for many decades with integrity, and it sounds like an advertisement, and I apologize, but still, they're out there. And I finally found one while I was working as a programmer, a computer programmer, if you can believe that, for a small brokerage firm. The president was the kind of broker I wanted nothing to do with, the kind of investor I didn't want anything to do with. He was hard charging, he made a lot of money, he lost a lot of money. In fact, he had made a small fortune and he had lost it in the 73, 74 bear market. Yeah, he had really, really gotten on hard times. And he was building back up again. This was in the 1980s. So it's 1980s, not 1880s. And 1980s, and so I would always tell him, Frank, because that's his name, Frank, he's passed away now, and my name's Frank, I'd say, you know, I don't trust these folks. And he goes, you're not ready. And I said, okay. He was a bit of a barker, but he was actually a very sweet, kind man. And I talked with the vice president, who was a woman in a world that at that time was still pretty dominated by men, but not as much anymore. In fact, they need more women. They want more women. They know they need minorities and people who are bilingual and women. And they like ex-military, too, because it's a structured, regulated environment. She showed me this one mutual fund. It was American. I'm still with them since then, a long time ago. And I read everything I could. I read that prospectus front to back, all 31 or 32 pages. It was 32 pages, but a few of them are blank. And I came back and I said, okay, can I see the other prospectus for the other mutual fund you were talking about? And she said, yeah. Did you read the prospectus? I said, yes! I read the whole darn thing! You know, I'm not going to give your money to these people. I want to know what they're up to. She looked at me like I had three eyes in the middle of my forehead and said, you read the prospectus? I don't know anybody who's ever read a prospectus. I've never read a prospectus. And she had been in the business over 20 years. Or more than 20 years at the time. Read the prospectus. Now, the mutual fund annual report is a little more easy to read. Some of them are less easier to read. So that's your assignment, actually, is to go in there, find a mutual fund annual report. There are plenty of places. You can go to the class website, Canvas, but just any search will give you mutual fund annual reports, especially if you have a 401k already or a Roth IRA already. Look at your companies. And they're more forthcoming, but still, they sometimes will try to hide information or put their best foot forward. So check those out. Okay, cool. Now, what about financial publications? Well, I'm a little dubious. You know, Morningstar is the popular one. Lipper's better, but you got to go to the library to get that. Actually, they've been giving away more stuff for free on their website. Both of them want you to sign up. Morningstar is much more woo, 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 rah, rah, rah. where Lipper is more sedate and a very reserved and very stately old company. And then all the magazines, Business Week's, Forbes, Kiplinger's. These surveys are often a bit of a who's done the best over the last year or 3 years or whatever. I ain't interested in that. I want to see how well you've done over decades. So that's me. But everyone's a little different. You know, they want to see what's hot. Good luck. 71. How about the websites? Well, Morningstar is actually... Lipper's not bad now. They've actually loosened up and are giving more information. Business Week's pretty good. You know, finance.yahoo.com, it used to be great, folks. It really used to be a good website. And some people still say, oh, it's still pretty good. Well, I just remember it when it was awesome, so I kind of get upset. Finance.google is undergoing some changes, so maybe that's going to get better. But the mutual fund websites now have gotten a lot better. You see, when the internet was still very young in the late 1990s, the mutual fund websites started to just explode. Both T. Rowe Price and Vanguard had these universities, these educational, and they were awesome. And I was just so excited. And then I guess the SEC kind of cracked down on them and said, look, you know, you're not educational institutions. And in the 2000 to 2002 bear market, they all pulled back. I'm not sure exactly why. I'm just guessing, but I don't know. But now, more and more, they are promoting education again. I guess the Securities and Exchange Commission said, okay, you know. Because remember, the industry is very, very regulated. And you have, before you can give any information to your clients, if you're a broker, it all has to be vetted and approved by FINRA, the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority. So it's an extremely regulated system, industry. You know, people say, what about the First Amendment? No, yeah, it's not the First Amendment, folks. First Amendment says that the marketplace for ideas is unregulated. It has to be open and honest and not honest, but it has to be open and candid, and not, you can't censor people in that respect. But when it comes to things like medical devices or drugs or in this case financial products, no First Amendment rights, folks. You have to have it vetted. You have to have it approved before you can give it out to your clients. And then the mother load of all information, as we mentioned already, is the Investment Company Institute website. And if you are a statistics type of person, then you're going to love ICI.org. Check it out. And as I said, I mentioned their annual mutual fund annual yearbook comes out around May or so. So go check that out, because that's a real great thing to read, in my humble opinion. Slide 72. Oh boy, it's exhausting, isn't it? Yeah, there's so many choices. How do you pick a mutual fund? Well, here's some advice from yours truly, and for what it's worth. Pick a mutual fund that invests in high-quality stocks and bonds. Now, quality is a very difficult word to quantify. How do you define quality? Well, I know it when I see it. Every quality is in the eyes of the beholder. But it's, in my humble opinion, pretty easy to spot bad quality mutual funds that have bounced around like crazy and sort of did this strategy and then this strategy and what was ever in and out of the vogue at the time. So it's more difficult to find the high quality ones, but it's pretty easy to find the low quality ones. You want a mutual fund that is well diversified across several industries and sectors of the economy. Why? Because diversification and professional money management, diversification is one of the most important things about a mutual fund. And you want one that has a long-term perspective and a manager, or better yet, again, in my humble experience, a management team with many years of experience. You see, for decades, and this was Fidelity just, this is what they did. They would just shuffle their managers around like a deck of cards, and people who were awesome got to stick around and were showered with love and attention and money, and the others were just kicked out after a couple years. And they're all changing. I should take this out, which is virtually all of them. They are all changing their ways. They realize that the companies like American, T. Rowe Price, Dodge and Cox, that have used management teams have more, or less erratic behavior. They have more consistent behavior. And so more and more companies are starting to use management teams with many years of experience. It used to be that the average tenure was under 4 years. Under 4 years. I mean, a lot of people never made it to the second year. Yeah, but now it's a lot more. I think it's over 5 now, and it's getting higher. So that's a good thing, in my humble opinion. And then most importantly, you need to look at longevity. You look at mutual funds that have been around for decades and performed consistently well in both good and bad markets. You see, I tell people, don't tell me how well you did in a good market, because I ain't interested. Any idiot, yourself and myself included, can do well in a raging bull market, right? What I want to see is how well you did when the organic matter hit the ventilating device, because it's going to happen. We know it's going to happen. History tells us it's going to happen. Capitalism is this history of booms and busts and booms and busts. So we know there's going to be times when markets go down. And that's when, in my humble opinion, you earn your money. As a broker and as a mutual fund manager, when times are tough. Okay? And then see how well you've done through several of those boom and bust cycles. So, on slide 73, let us now take a look at a sample stock mutual fund. And here's where we would pass out some literature to the face-to-face classes. It's all on the website. It's in Canvas, so you'll check it out. We're going to take a look at one mutual fund. It's not the only one out there, but this one I really like because it's been around for over 80 years. In 1934, they started. And what can we reasonably expect from a stock mutual fund? Well, I tell people 8, 9, 10% if you're lucky. These people have done 12%. Over 80 some odd years. Right. And you'll hear people say, but stocks are risky. And they're right. In the short term, they are. But in the long term, no. No. They have to succeed. Why? Because if they don't, we all die. Unless we come up with some better system to feed, clothe, and shelter ourselves. I mean, capitalism might be just the worst possible economic system ever developed. Except for all the others. Yeah. And if the stock market crashes and stays down, that means the economy has cratered. And it means that people are out of work. And it means that there's no food at the Vons, that there's no gas at the Chevron station. There's no clothes at the Gap. The cell phones aren't working. There's no electricity. The sewers are backed up. The trash isn't being picked up. The hospitals, the schools, the banks, the fire departments, the police departments are all shuttered. Folks, your Roth IRA, your mutual fund, is going to be the least of your worries if that happens. But I don't think it's going to. I believe the next 10, 20, 30 years, assuming we don't blow ourselves up, die in our own waste, meteorite, tsunami, earthquake, disco returns, assuming these exogenous events, which is a cool word, isn't it? Learn how to say exogenous. These external events don't mess us up. The next 10, 20, 30 years, and I've already described this to you, because we're global now, we can't go back. And it's good. I think it's good because people want clean and healthy yogurt, and they want Coca-Cola, and they want Marlboro cigarettes, and they want cell phones, and they want Nike, and they want cars and bicycles and televisions and yeah. But is it a clean ride? No. And so on the website is a hypothetical illustration that shows you how well this fund has done over 80 some odd years. And it's amazing. You know, $10,000 becomes hundreds of millions of dollars, over $100 million. But In the meantime, it bounced up and down quite a bit. Look at 1972, 1973. Look at 1987, where it went from 6 million to 9 million and back down to 6 million. Look at 2000 to 2002, where it went from, say, what was it? I don't know, forget what it was. It went down a lot. And then the worst, right, since the Great Depression was 2008. From 70 million down to 45 million. Ouch. But as long as you kept a long-term perspective, you've done very, very well, and it's come back and then some. You'll hear people say, but now is not a good time to invest. Well, excuse me, when is it ever a good time to invest? Well, there are some times when the market's done really, really well. 10 years, almost 20%, 1990s. That was the worst time to invest, 1999, right? Because then it went down 50%, almost 50% over the next 2 years. So the takeaway from this is that for you and me, those of us investing $50, $100 a month over 30 years, we're never going to pick the worst time. We're never going to pick the best time. We're always going to pick, you know, in between times. And it's time that's important, time in the market. So there's a couple more graphs that I want you to take a look at. They're on the website. They're in Canvas. Worst day, best day, the benefit of time. Check those out. And it turns out that even if you do pick the worst time every day, I mean every year, if you pick the worst day every year, you still did a pretty good. Okay. What about market downturns? What about when the organic matter hits the Ventolin device? Well, the important thing to do is to keep a long-term perspective and dollar cost average. Now, dollar cost average is a horrible name, and I've tried, I've racked my brains to come up with some other better name, which I haven't been able to. So I want you to remember it, and in fact, I'd love you to memorize this slide. A system of buying an investment at regular intervals with a fixed dollar amount. Well, that's pretty boring. In other words, $50, $100 a month comes out of your paycheck, out of your checking account, and goes into your investment. But the cool thing about this is that no matter what happens, when you wake up, there's always good news. See, I told my wife this many years ago because she was terrified of the stock market, and she met me, right? I said, Anita, because that's her name, Anita. No matter what happens tomorrow, there's always good news. The market's up. Good news. Yippee! Your account is worth more. Your $100 is now $100.20. The market is down. Good news. Huh? What? Next month, when you contribute the $50 or $100, you're buying low. You're getting shares at a discount. Make sense? Isn't that what you want to do? We'll discuss investor psychology, but when JCPenney's or Macy's has a sale, people run in the store, right? When the stock market has a sale, people run out because they're terrified. Yeah. And I'm going to put it here, and I hope you memorize it. Your average cost per share should be lower than your average price per share. What does that mean? Well, it means by investing the same amount every month, when shares are high, you're buying fewer shares. And when shares are low, you're buying more shares. So your average cost per share should be lower than your average price per share. Now, we'll take a look at some examples later on this semester, but do your best to remember that, and we'll come back to it. So don't worry, we're going to come back to this. Slide number 75. Now, we made mention of these hypotheticals. We'll come back to these. Most mutual fund companies have a system for running hypotheticals. They're called illustrations, hypothetical illustrations. The insurance companies have them also. They're examples of returns of investments for either lump sum principals or streams of investments or some combination of both. A stream of investment is my best name for a dollar cost average. I like to think of it like a river. You keep contributing and it keeps getting bigger and bigger and wider until it comes out into the ocean. They must be approved by the Securities Exchange Commission and FINRA, which means that you have to be a broker, you have to be a licensed broker to show these things, and contain disclaimers about past versus future performance. So in the face-to-face class, we would show these now. They're on the website, they're in Canvas, and we run them for this sample mutual fund for 30 years at $100, 40 years at $100, 40 years at $100, increasing $10 a year. So first year $100, next year $110, $120, every third year. And then for those people in their 40s and later 40s and 50s, we do $500 for 20 years. Cool? So check those out. And if you want to see any other combination, just contact me and I can talk about this stuff far longer than any reasonable person would ever want to listen, dear students. So do check those out. Slide number 76. Now, some people will say, oh, you're just chilling for the Investment Company of America. And I say, no, I'm not. I like the ICA. It's one of my favorite funds. But it's not the only one out there, folks. Look, slide 76. Look at these funds. 11.5%. 11.5%. Since 1950, 1931. Dodge and Cox. Told you they're an awesome mutual fund company, folks. But they're kind of strange. There's only 5 funds in the whole family. Look at Fidelity. They've got a few. Look at Franklin. Franklin's awesome. And they got another one down here in the Templeton Growth Fund. There's the investment. That's the one we were looking at. Investment Company America, MFS. They have the nation's oldest fund. I think 1924 is when it started. T. Rowe Price. I told you about T. Rowe Price. Check them out. They're based in Baltimore. Great company. Dreyfus Putnam, a venerable old mutual fund company. And then there's a Vanguard fund right there, Vanguard Windsor, and then another American fund, Washington Mutual. So these are all mutual funds that have been around for 50 years or more. Now, am I telling you to go out and buy any of these mutual funds? Well, maybe. It's up to you. But the thing about these mutual funds is they virtually all are domestic. Almost. I think the Templeton Growth Fund is not. But virtually all of them are domestic. And that's just because it wasn't until the 1970s, 80s, that people even wanted to think about investing outside the United States. There were investments outside the United States. T. Rowe Price, Templeton, even American had some investing outside the United States. But it wasn't until the later 70s, 80s that people even thought it was okay to invest outside the United States. And that's why these are mostly based in the United States, because they're over 50 years. There are very good mutual funds that are not 50 years old that are also global and international, so they're just not 50 years old. But this is why I show you that, because show you this slide, is because I want to show you that there are people out there who have beaten the indices over decades and have done very well. All of them have done better than 10%. Now, wait a minute. Franklin Utility Funds, I snuck that in there, less than 10%. Why? Because, folks, a utilities fund has no business making 9.77%. Utilities funds, you get 5, 6%. You're a happy camper. But these guys, Franklin, I told you, Franklin's a good company. Check them out. Franklin was able to, since 1948, generate 9.77% from a utilities fund. Yeah. So these are just places to start, folks. There are many, many others. And if you want to see some global funds, shoot me an email and I'll give you the name of some really good global funds. But who's got good global funds is Franklin, of course, T. Rowe Price, American. Who else? Oppenheimer. Oppenheimer has some good global funds. Who else? Well, you know, Vanguard, Fidelity. Check them all out. Check all of them out as much as you can. Get lost, as I like to say. And I don't mean it in a nasty way. I mean, just start, spend a couple hours, just go to the library. You know, you've heard of libraries, right? Go to the library and check out Lipper and Morningstar publications. Yeah. Okay. 77. What about the investors? What types of returns do many typical mutual fund investors earn? Not so good. Wait a minute. How can that be? How could mutual fund investors do worse than the mutual funds they invest in? Well, it's actually pretty easy. Many typical mutual fund investors buy high, sell low. And there's a saying in the industry, and now this graph, it's a company called, who put this out? It was I forget who actually came up with this originally. But now this is from the Investment Company Institute. They internalized it. But I forget, it was a strange name. They're a very strange name. Dulworth or something. Duckworth. A very strange name company. Dahlbear. Yeah, they're the ones who actually came up with this first. But here, what are we looking at? Well, this graph, if it's on your cell phone, it's probably hard to read. But what you're seeing in the green are either inflows and outflows. So anything above the zero is when money, the green or blue, if it shows up on your screen as blue, is when money has been coming into the mutual fund companies. When it goes below the zero, there's money coming out of the mutual fund companies. So watch what happens, right? Here is 2000. The market peaked in March of 2000, and yet people continued to just throw money into the mutual funds. And then the yellow is the actual market return, the total return, as the market kept falling and falling and falling. And it wasn't until 2002 that people started pulling money out after the market had already crashed. So now the market comes roaring back, they come roaring back. So they took their money out at the bottom, the market comes back up, they buy at the top. And then what happens? The market crashes in 2008, they pull their money out at the worst possible time. And even after the market had skyrocketed back, very few people actually got back in until 2014. Right. Don't be one of the typical mutual fund investors. You just ignore what's going on in the world. Keep putting $50, $100, assuming you've chosen a high quality, long-term oriented mutual fund. If you're going to try to play the game of getting in and getting out at the right time, I wish you a lot of luck. I don't think you're going to succeed, but you may. You may succeed. I'm not even going to try because the history and the odds are against you. So the bottom line on mutual funds, choose a fund family and stick with them. Reevaluate them periodically. I don't know, once or twice a year is enough. And if you have a financial advisor, call them once a year. They might call you, especially if you've got a lot of money, and take you out on your birthday and send you a bottle of wine. Make changes judiciously and sparingly. You like those words? Judiciously? I love saying judiciously and sparingly. And as you approach retirement, migrate from stock funds to bond funds. But dear students, don't give up on stocks entirely. Even in retirement, we'll come back to this later on. If you're the typical person, especially you millennials, because who knows how long you're going to live, most of you are going to make it at least to 100 years old, you're going to be living a long time in retirement, so you need to still have some stock exposure. Now, of course, you want to be a lot less exposed. You don't want to have all growth stocks and aggressive growth stock mutual funds. But don't give on stocks entirely, and we'll discuss this later on when we get to balanced funds and diversification and asset allocation. But dollar cost average, $100 a month, $50, $25, whatever you can afford. People will come up to me and say, well, I don't have any money to invest. I say, how can you afford $50 a month? And they go, oh, I don't know. So how much is your cell phone? Oh, well, it's $90 a month, but it's supposed to be $60. I download a lot of ringtones. The most part, forget about them. That's why you're a mutual fund investor. It's a long-term investment. It's one of the easy investments you can make. Don't be one of the mutual fund investors that does worse than your mutual funds. Stick with them for the long term. And that, dear students, is our final presentation for Chapter 4 on mutual funds. Go back and study this material, folks, every day. A little bit every day is how you learn, and you will be amazed at how you will surprise and amaze your friends with your newfound knowledge. You will be their investment guru. Now, we are ready to begin our journey on stocks. And we're going to spend 5-6 weeks on stocks, 4-6 weeks, depending on, whatever happens in the next few weeks. This is the most exciting part of the semester, in my humble opinion. So we will see you in our next presentation, where we get started on stocks. Chapter 5, Our Introduction to Stocks.